Turn your anxiety into hopefulness. Turn your discouragement into power. Volunteer with Her Turn right here on WORT Madison and make your woman's voice heard.
Listening to WORT Madison, I'm your host, Lauren Hicks, and this is the Perpetual Notion Machine. Exciting news just hit the headlines. At the Mass General Hospital in Boston has just announced the world's first successful transplantation of a genetically edited pig kidney into a 62-year-old man living with end-stage kidney disease. What could this mean for the future of kidney transplants? That's what our guest here tonight will help us understand. With me is Dr. Dixon Kaufman. He is a Ray D. Owen Professor in the Division of Transplantation and a director of UW Health Transplant Center. He's here tonight as our expert on kidney transplants and will help us navigate the exciting science behind xenotransplanted organs. Hello, Dr. Kaufman, and welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine.
Thank you. It's nice to be here with your listeners.
We're very excited to have you. So let's get started off with the basics. What is the role of the kidneys in our body?
Well, we have two kidneys, and the kidneys serve to filter blood and remove toxins and other metabolites that build up that need to be excreted, and that is excreted actually in two forms, through urine, and can metabolize agents and break them down back into our bloodstream.
Okay. So when problems arise, how does that happen? Why is that so detrimental?
Individuals can develop chronic renal failure that can occur over years or could occur relatively short term. And when that happens, they have significant problems in excreting the fluids that they ingest and metabolizing their chemistry that can cause dysregulation and can be life-threatening without a dialysis treatment or a transplant if this goes on for an extended period of time.
So when you say dialysis, is that kind of like being hooked up to a machine for the rest of the duration of your, until you can get a transplant, or how does that pan out?
So dialysis is instituted when somebody's native kidneys are functioning at probably less than 10%. And then they will either need to be on a hemodialysis machine, which circulates their blood and cleans their blood directly, or a second mechanism of dialysis is called peritoneal dialysis, where they put a small tube actually into your abdomen and fill your abdomen with fluid, which then interacts with the body and exchanges fluids and chemistries, and then the fluid is eliminated and
right.
then refilled like once a day. So there's hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis. And the third renal replacement therapy is a kidney transplant.
Do people opt for the kidney transplant if they can?
Most people would be interested in a kidney transplant. Now, the average age of a person on dialysis is about 65. The average age of a kidney transplant recipient is 45 years. So it's mostly for younger type people, though individuals, if they're in decent health and are older, can certainly get a kidney transplant. And individuals in their 80s have had successful kidney transplants, but they are exceptionally healthy for that age despite having renal failure.
What are the complications that can arise after getting a kidney transplant?
Well, there are several complications that are significant. The most important complication is if something happens to the blood vessels when they're sewn to the recipient, and they form a blood clot, and the blood flow stops to the kidney, and the kidney oftentimes just can't survive that. It's very infrequent. Happens maybe 1 in 200 cases, but in that situation, the kidney would have to be removed.
Oh, wow.
So they would undergo a surgery, and then if there was a thrombosis term, that kidney would have to be removed, and that can happen early within the first week.
Okay, so that's kind of like the trial period maybe to see if something were to occur?
Sometimes we use the term, you know, does the kidney take? And that would be an example of a kidney that just didn't take. So it's infrequent. Now, there are other concerns with a kidney transplant. Our immune system is going to try to reject that organ because it's not us.
Mm-hmm.
So the individuals all have to take anti-rejection medicines for life. Now, those medicines are well tolerated. They are miracle drugs, and they prevent rejection. And individuals have been on them for decades and decades. Losing a kidney from rejection these days is not very common, interestingly, because the medicines are good. But a downside to those medicines, it weakens our immune system, and you can be more susceptible to infection, but not so prone that you have to live in a bubble or something like that. You just have to use common sense and stay away from people that are sick. You don't necessarily have to wear a mask at all or anything like that. So the infection risk is not so extreme either, and in fact, many of our patients for the first 3 to 6 months take some antibiotics or antiviral agents to minimize the infection risk early on when the immunosuppression is the highest.
Gotcha. Oh, so if you're up for getting a kidney donation, can you get it from just anyone, or is there a certain matching process that goes along with that?
If a person is on the waiting list for a kidney transplant, there are two categories of donors. The most common, we call that a deceased organ donor. We used to call that a cadaver donor. That is someone who has died, and they and their families have indicated they want their organs to be used for transplantation, and they are. The second category are living donors. About a quarter to a third of all kidney transplants are done with living donors. These are individuals that are healthy. They've had an extensive evaluation. They wish to donate a kidney, mostly to somebody they know.
Right.
Could be a family member, could be a friend. Although some individuals come forward and say, I know there are so many people on the waiting list. I want to donate to somebody on the waiting list, even if I don't know who they are, if I'm healthy enough to do that.
That's amazing. Yeah.
They are truly amazing people. Everybody, families and individuals that donate are heroes in a certain respect because they are giving the gift of life to somebody they may not even know for their own benefit that doesn't serve them any specific benefit.
Yeah, that's spectacular. I was just kind of curious on how, when you said before how a kidney wouldn't take, is that like, could a blood type kind of be playing into that?
Kidney transplantation, the first successful one, actually also done in Boston, was between brothers, so it was a living donor, and that took because the immune systems were similar between the brothers and the matching was good. They didn't have very good anti-rejection medicines, and that one took because an immune response did not occur. When they tried to transplant more people from donors that were more immunologically disparate than the recipient, then they discovered a very deep and effective immune system in people, and their medicines were really not all that effective. So they had to learn strategies to avoid transplanting people that would immediately reject through certain immune systems. And that's where you kind of got the term that, you know, whether it would take or not. Over the decades that kidney transplantation has evolved, better screening, better matching, better understanding of the immune system, better medications, better antiviral agents, better screening of the recipient, better screening of the donor. So many things have happened that the success rates for someone to get a kidney transplant to be alive and well off dialysis 1 year afterwards is in the mid-90 percentiles.
Whoa, that's incredible. That's good news. Science is honestly amazing.
There has definitely been many improvements, so much so that more people are interested, and the waiting list has continued to grow. One thing our technology, perhaps up until now, has not been able to solve is the organ donor shortage.
Right.
And that has been a real difficult thing to solve, despite the fact that people are donating kidneys, living donors. We're using more deceased donors. But the waiting list and the number of people that could be helped with transplant grows faster.
That's a great segue into our topic for tonight about how they were able to use an animal's kidney into a human and have that successfully take. Do you see this becoming more of the future of how organ donation, even broader than just kidneys, could be?
Well, this is a potential major breakthrough, could be a game changer. Now, the idea of using an organ from an animal that might be considered closely related to people is not new, but it has always failed terribly.
Oh, no.
Because the organs would not take, mm-hmm. because the immune system in us is so intense towards animal organs,
right,
that they wouldn't survive for very long, even with the better anti-rejection medicines.
So what would be the solution for that? I know that for this one, they used like CRISPR-Cas9 to try and genetically alter it to kind of eliminate some genes that are animal related. Just trying to see how they could make that compatible to a human.
That is exactly right. So over the years that xenotransplantation has failed, much has been learned about why that has been the case and what are the obstacles. And there are several obstacles. And those have been found to be related to certain proteins expressed by, say, the pig blood vessels that the immune system in us reacts very strongly to. Using very advanced and relatively new techniques of gene editing with what you mentioned, CRISPR, has allowed gene-edited pigs to be developed that can eliminate some of these antigens that we react to. And not only can you eliminate certain genes that would express these antigens, you can actually insert new genes that the tissues will express that can help either prevent injury or repair injury or prevent an immune response. And it has been the combination of these knockouts and knock-ins and the development of these new genetically edited pigs that has allowed a fresh look at can we surmount that immune response and get these organs to take for a meaningful period of time.
So what are they trying to knock in for the genes? Are they trying to do something that's like better than what a human kidney could be?
They're trying to knock in various proteins that help balance, say, the blood clotting issue,
mm-hmm.
or certain genes that will prevent certain kinds of cell immune responses. And so it's a way of tailoring the organ so it is not so immunogenic, meaning it's not so visibly foreign to people.
Do you think pigs is just the first start? Could we eventually go on to like cows or maybe fish?
Right now, the pig model is the best because you can do these gene editing methods. The organ function and actually the size of many of the organs in the pigs can match that of people.
Mm.
So the size of the kidney or the size of the liver, the size of the heart. These are things that we've been hearing about in the news, fit into people. The question is, okay, how well will they match human organ function so that it is doing in us what our native organs would otherwise do? And that's going to be a really interesting test. Even if we get past the immune barriers, what are the barriers with respect to the organ function? Will a kidney clean our blood as well as our own kidneys? Will it make enough urine? Will there be any metabolic derangements? Or our native kidneys help us keep our red blood counts high? Will the new gene-edited pig kidneys be able to do that? These are unknown answers to these questions because nobody has survived long enough with the organ to know what the answer is.
Do you think there's any hesitations with using an animal organ for a transplant?
Well, there's kind of two main categories of concerns. The first I've already mentioned, will it function like we want it? The second is it possible the pig kidney could harbor some kind of infectious agent that could get into the blood of the recipient, and could that infect other people?
Right.
And there are certain what we call porcine viruses that are sort of integrated into the genetic material of within pig cells. It's not certain whether those could actually infect people. One of the strains developed of gene-edited pigs have knocked out all these, what they're called, PERV genes that are kind of the potential viruses of the pig to minimize the infection. So you don't want to transplant people with organs that are going to cause some kind of viral pandemic, right? I mean, believe me, the federal agencies are all over this, and there are many, many safeguards and plans and slow progress, one case at a time, to ensure safety for the public.
Right.
Because if this becomes widespread and scaled up, we want to be sure it is safe and we're not going to create a problem that wasn't there before.
Yeah, no, that would not be ideal at all. I do want to get into a little bit of the surgery, because you said that before you were doing the surgery of the kidney and then also the pancreas. So can you go into like how it goes from you have the kidney and the pancreas harvested? How does that go into the body? What are you doing?
We can talk primarily about the kidney only, because that is the relevant organ for people with kidney failure. If somebody also has diabetes as their cause of the kidney disease, and diabetes is one of the most common causes of end-stage kidney disease, in certain people, we are able to transplant the pancreas to cure the diabetes and the kidney from the same organ donor. Now, this is not done from pigs. This is all done people to people with deceased organ donors. But doing pancreases from pig pancreases is not yet on the radar.
Right.
That won't be for quite a long time, if at all.
Gotcha.
So the attention is really on the kidney alone.
Right. So then for the kidney, how would you go into like hooking it up in kind of like layman's terms of getting it into the recipient?
So the way the kidney anatomy is in a pig is not that dissimilar from people. There's usually one artery, one vein, and a ureter through which the urine comes and goes into the bladder. So the kidney has to be procured from the pig first with a different operation, a separate independent operation, to take it out intact with the blood vessels intact and the ureter intact. And then it is implanted in people in a virtually identical manner the way human kidneys are put in, because the anatomy is so similar. There's a single artery, a single vein, and the ureter goes into the bladder. And the location is the same. We do not take out one of the kidneys in people and then, you know, plug in the new kidney where the old kidney is. Generally, the native kidneys stay in place in people, and you add a third kidney, and it's in a slightly different location. And so people are walking around, most kidney transplant recipients, with three kidneys.
What happens to the old kidney? Does it, like, kind of shrivel up, or does it just remain its size?
The native kidneys still have blood flow. They just don't work by cleaning the blood, making urine. And the disease of the native kidneys really doesn't jump to the new kidney.
That's good.
So it's kind of two independent systems, and that's why the native kidneys don't have to be removed for most patients.
It wouldn't cause any harm, though, if it wasn't. It's just kind of there, like an extra organ?
Yeah, the native kidneys are just kind of benign. They don't they don't hurt anymore. They don't cause any damage, and they're not going to hurt the new kidney.
How do they have enough space? Is there a lot of space in the human body when you're operating?
There is actually plenty of space. So that has not been an issue. And you only need to transplant one new kidney to get good kidney function. Now, you're not going to have quite the same percentile, if you will, of the normal kidney function with one kidney, but you can get between 50% to two-thirds, and that's plenty to live the rest of your life.
Gotcha. So then for someone that just underwent the kidney transplant and they're going to start taking their immunosuppressants, what is that like? How is their recovery time going to be looking like?
The time it takes to actually implant one of a kidney transplant is about 2.5 hours or so. Patients are in the hospital for another 3 to 6 days, depending on how quickly it works, depending on what their state of health was going into the surgery. And they have to understand their medications and know how to take care of themselves by the time they're discharged. Once they're discharged, though, they still have to take the medicines. They have to maintain contact with the transplant center, their nurses, their doctors, get their labs checked, visit the clinic, get their prescriptions renewed. So at least at the University of Wisconsin, we sort of adopt them into our family and provide them a lot of close care throughout the rest of their life, because it's more than just getting over the surgery. That's, you know, the first couple weeks they're over the surgery. But we want them to take care of that single kidney for the rest of their life, and that could be for decades.
Right. And it's really nice to know that they have that support all along their way. So you always have someone to turn to, which is really great.
That's a really, really important part of their post-transplant care, is the support that they get.
Yeah. I guess I'm kind of jumping back and forth, but what I'm thinking about is that we were talking a little bit before about how long of a wait it could be to get a kidney transplant, or just to get a kidney donation, I should say. So with the new kind of technology that's arising, if an animal organ is able to be implemented, do you see like that amount of time, wait time being reduced?
It'll take some time before we can make a substantial impact on the wait time, and to also get some challenging individuals transplanted. Just to get an idea of, well, how many people are we talking about that are waiting? In the United States, there's about 90,000 people on the kidney transplant waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
In the state of Wisconsin, it's about 1,500.
Wow.
We do, in the state of Wisconsin, we probably are doing there are 3 transplant programs on the whole state. There aren't that many. Maybe 500 kidney transplants a year.
Wow.
Okay, so it's a lot of transplants being performed, but the number of people on the waiting list grows more and more. The average waiting time is probably 3 to 5 years. Now, there are some individuals that are really hard to transplant because they're called sensitized, meaning they may have had a previous transplant, they need a second transplant, they've had a blood transfusion, and they developed antibodies or an immune system that is ready to attack a new kidney. And it's hard to find the right match because you have to bring in a kidney that doesn't have certain antigens that we know the recipient will react to. And some individuals are sensitized to 90, 95, 99% of our tissue typing. So they're really, really hard to find just that right kidney. Now, what's interesting, whether or not those people might be transplantable with a kidney from a pig because they don't express those antigens, that might afford them an opportunity to get transplanted where they may have to wait not 3 to 5 years, but 10 years or longer. So that, I think, was the situation of the individual at Mass General that got transplanted. He had had a prior kidney transplant. We're assuming he was highly sensitized, and they did mention that he had been waiting for a long time and it would probably have many, many more years of waiting time as well. And he didn't have a whole lot of time. He was able to wait. So he was in more dire need of a kidney transplant than maybe somebody else on dialysis.
So do people ever go, like, after a kidney transplant, then back on to dialysis?
If somebody has a kidney transplant and for one reason or another, it starts to lose function, could be from an immune response, it could be from some intrinsic disease, and they fall to that less than 10% amount of function, they may need to have to restart dialysis and go back on dialysis, get reevaluated for another retransplant, and then get transplanted again. Could come from a deceased donor, or maybe somebody in their family is able to donate, and that would shorten their waiting time, and they could get a repeat transplant that much sooner.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, I think we are running a little bit out of time, but I do want to end on a little bit of a positive note. So what has been your favorite part of being a part of UW Health?
Well, UW Health is a really fantastic organization with tremendous leadership and people that really, really enjoy what they're doing. They see a lot of purpose and meaning into serving others and helping them get back to a good state of health. We see that in transplant all the time, and that's why we enjoy it so much.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. We were just talking with Dr. Dixon Kaufman. He is a UW Health transplant surgeon and a professor in the Department of Surgery in the Division of Transplantation at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, where he specializes in kidney and pancreas transplant surgeries. You can read more about this life-saving story linked on our website under the show notes at wortfm.org. Thank you, Dr. Kaufman, for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
And that does it for the Perpetual Notion Machine, our weekly science news show here on community radio station WORT Madison. I've been your host, Lauren Hicks, and coming up next is Radio Literature with Melvin Hinton. Thank you so much for joining us here tonight.
The Salon Piano Series presents Bill Charlap and Rini Rosnes on Saturday, April 6th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, April 7th at 2 p.m. at Farley's House of Pianos. Bill Charlap and Rini Rosnes, two of the premier pianists in jazz who are also husband and wife, have joined forces to record their first collaborative album, Double Portrait, on Blue Note. Their live shows feature lively renditions of exquisite four-hand jazz piano duets. More information can be found at salonpianoseries.org. The Salon Piano Series presents Bill Charlap and Rini Rosnes on Saturday, April 6th and Sunday, April 7th at Farley's House of Pianos, 6522 Seabold Road in Madison. Live music lives at WORT Madison.
Welcome to Radio Literature, Madison's weekly look at poetry, fiction, nonfiction, theater, and experimental writing for readers of all ages. Settle in for a half hour of conversation on radio literature. Here's your host, Melvin Hinton.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Radio Literature. Our program tonight is, in a sense, a continuation of last week's program when our guest was Charles Payne, author of the play The Classroom Ain't Enough, which will open on April 19th at Broome Street Theater. Charles Payne is the author of that play, and tonight we have two people associated with the actual performances. We have Matt Reines. Oh. I just learned today that I've been thinking his name incorrectly. I don't think I ever pronounced it aloud, but now I have it straight. Is that German?
Yeah, it's got a German roots to it.
Okay. If I'd known that, I would have known how to pronounce it. And then it probably would have been the other way around. You probably said, yeah, but my grandfather changed it to Reins.
It's one of those names that you always have to spell out because no one really knows how to spell it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Do you speak German? Any German?
Beer.
Beer. Oh, me. I love the German language. And whenever I say that, especially when I lived in Spain, people would just stare at me. They wouldn't know what to say because they just couldn't imagine anybody loving anything about the German language. And I would say, it's so beautiful. And then they would stare at me even more intensely. They wouldn't know what to say, how to respond. But anyway, I do. I think the German language is one of the most beautiful languages I've ever heard. It's not one of the languages. There was a point in my life when I considered myself to be trilingual,